Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Thank you, Chris. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. The Vikings get a third and a fifth as they're in sell mode. Yannick Ngakoue to Baltimore. Ravens fans will be excited. They have wanted and needed a pass rusher, and they got a pretty good one. Although, you know, he's been pretty disappointing this season. That Vikings defense has been terrible. ESPN ranks him 32nd of 47 edge rushers in pass rush win percentage. But here's what I like about this deal for both teams. I actually think I like it more for Minnesota, honestly, but it's going to help the Ravens, ideally, a lot this season in the present. I like when teams evaluate and say they're going to sell. You don't see it that often in the NFL.
Exactly.
And they just get rid of veterans and say, you know what, we're not any good. We stink. And Minnesota right now does. They're better than the, I think they're, what are they, 1-5 maybe, something
one
like that?
1-5.
Same record as Washington. I mean, they beat Washington, but they're not going anywhere. They know that. So here's what they'll do. Maybe you get rid of a couple veterans, you add some draft picks, and you can go out and find young talent. They gave up a 2-5 to get Ngakoue at the start of the season when Danielle Hunter got hurt, who, by the way, is their best defensive player and hasn't played all year. And by doing that, I think now they trade him for a third and a fifth when you originally gave up a 2-5 to get him. Everyone's going to say, oh, you lost out on that, round worse. Well, yes, that's true, I guess. But here's where it's brilliant. Most teams just compound their mistakes. They say, oh, well, we can't trade him for a third and a fifth. It would look bad. We gave up a second and a fifth to get him. Oh, we can't bench him. We just took him in the first round. Don't compound mistakes. When you realize that you've made a mistake and you know that it's a mistake and or, you know, you just know that it didn't work, maybe it wasn't a mistake when you went and got him. You thought you might be better, but now you're terrible. Don't allow what the perception will be to influence your decision. And I think teams – way often, Danny, they overthink it and they do that too much.
This is so correct. It's good for Baltimore. They are in win-now mode and they're trying to win now, and you're damn right. Good move for them. That's a good pass rusher. I know what the PFF grade says, but 5 sacks, 7 quarterback hits, 5 tackles for a loss, that dude is good, and he will absolutely help them. And I think maybe it's situational. Who knows how it's going to work exactly, but I know that guy is a helpful football player. For Minnesota, you're 100% right. Teams don't do this, and it's irresponsible that they don't do it. There is a pride. There's this dinosaur, tough guy, hat on a hat, NFL mentality that still permeates the league. Teams don't know when they're cooked. You have to properly self-evaluate. Maybe we were in that Seattle game. We were close. We had Tennessee dead to rights. Doggone it. You're bad. You're not going anywhere. Assets, assets, assets. Get assets. That's what should be happening. It should be happening right now in Washington. Not that there are any players that teams are coveting, but they should be doing this. They should absolutely be moving on. Miami did it last year. Look where they are. The Raiders did it a couple years ago. Look where they are. Infinitely better off than they were a couple seasons ago. This is how you rebuild. This is how you manage in a salary cap league. You've got huge dollars committed to a quarterback. If you're Minnesota, you're going to have huge dollars committed to a running back. You had to move on from Stephon Diggs already. You need to find a way to save. The best way to save is to have rookie deals. The best way to get rookie deals is to get draft picks. You don't need this guy because you're not going anywhere. You could lose with him, or you could lose without him and have him get you something. This is the point I always make with Washington. They never do this, and I wish they would.
Yeah, and by the way, you get clubbed for this publicly sometimes, right? Like, They got made fun of for the Stephon Diggs thing. You're giving up your number one wide receiver? They got a one and a bunch of picks in that. They already replaced Stephon Diggs with Justin Jefferson, who's having a better season than him. Now, you got to hit on the picks. Otherwise, it doesn't work out. But I think there is absolute merit to what they are doing. And to your point, I wish more teams would do it. I think Ngakoue will be really good for the Ravens, by the way, because that's a position, too, that is somewhat dependent on what's going on around you. In Minnesota right now, you key on that guy. In Baltimore, you think you're just going to be able to key on him with Calais Campbell and all those dudes up front? No chance. So I think he could feast the rest of this season, and it could be a huge acquisition for them. To Washington, I don't know if there's a veteran on this team that they could actually trade for picks that would be all that helpful. Like, I'm just trying to think right now. Landon Collins, from a name and past profile standpoint, is a former All-Pro. You know, maybe you could kind of say, oh, this guy was great at one point, and your defense, maybe he could be. But with his contract, if you're taking that on, based on how he's played, you're not getting a third and a fifth for him. Kerrigan, if you wanted to. But if you wanted to trade Ryan Kerrigan, what do you get back? He played 7 snaps this past week. Now, he had a sack in those 7 snaps. But, and I know that the Giants only had 48 plays on offense, which is a crazy low number. But you're on the phone with someone. Like, think about a fantasy trade. You're trying to trade me a guy that's on your bench, and you're going, he can really help you. Look at his sack total. He's leading our team with 3 sacks. Sir, why did you play him on 7 snaps this year, this week? What's his value right now? What is he getting you, do you think? You think you get a 4th-round pick for Ryan Kerrigan? I'm not sure. I'd like to think you could.
Again, I'm always stunned at what NFL trade values are, so I'll never be able to accurately predict. But my response when someone says, why is he on your bench? Because we're a developmental team. We got 2 kids that we really like. And he'll help you more than he'll help us. And he deserves that chance. The guy could still rush the passer. He could still be an effective player. He'd be great for you as either a situational pass rusher, or if you need an every down defensive lineman, he could certainly do that too for you. He could play 60, 70% of the snaps. We're not doing it here because we got 2 kids that we really like, a couple first rounders over the last couple years you may have heard about. Somebody's going to watch and say, hey, this guy's still getting after the quarterback at a pretty good rate. He's winning in his limited snaps. 3 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, 3 tackles for a loss, only playing a little bit less than a quarter of the time. That's pretty damn impressive. He could help somebody. So, again, does that mean 3rd-round pick, 4th-round pick? I have no idea. But to me, that's always worth pursuing. And I love Ryan Kerrigan. I would love for him to spend his whole career here, get over 100 sacks as a career player here, and maybe – you know, have a borderline shot at the Hall of Fame. I know that sounds crazy, but if he puts together a couple more seasons where you get north of that, you could be in the top 20, 25 sack leaders in the history of this sport. And you build up enough of a resume, people can start talking about that. I would love for that to happen. But pragmatically and practically, this team isn't going anywhere. This is a veteran who might be able to get you something. And if it's just a ham sandwich, you don't do it, right? You don't just do it to hear yourself make a trade.
Well, that's the key, is you've got to find a sweet spot here. Like, for me, right, a 4th would be interesting. I wouldn't do it for a 5th. A 3rd, I think you'd have to do it, because a 3rd can be a legitimate, really good starter for you. Terry McLaurin was a 3rd-round pick. Yeah. You know? I don't know if you could get that. I'm just trying to think of other guys that even would have the value. Like, going through their starting lineup, Chase Young is off the table. Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen are off the table. Montez Sweat is off the table. I mean, you're not getting anything for John Bostic, an inside linebacker who's just okay. In the secondary, Kendall Fuller's off the table. Moreland, you're keeping. Nobody's trading for Apke. Fabian Moreau. Yeah, I don't know who you would trade. I mean, Haskins is in this conversation.
Yes, he is.
Kerrigan, Landon Collins. I don't even think on offense there's another name. Brandon Scherff, but on a franchise tag, is someone, you know, acquiring a guard. A team like Dallas or Philly might be so desperate with injuries that they would bring him in, but you're not trading him in the division, obviously. I could see him being a trade chip, honestly, if there's a team that's in that Dallas boat where their offensive line is in complete shambles. You don't see that a lot in the NFL, where teams just seek out a guard and trade for that guy. And the value at that position on the trade market has not caught up to the money, where they're starting to get paid $13, $14, $15 million a year. But that's the only name on offense I could think of that a team would be interested in asking you about.
Yeah. So, and again, so this year's not a great example because, as we've talked about a million times, they're under-talented. Their veterans aren't performing. They're either overpriced in the case of Collins, or, you know, part-time players in the case of Kerrigan. So this may not be the best opportunity. I just mean historically. Sort of the big picture. This year may not prove the point, but we got a huge data set that says they don't do this. They don't self-evaluate and say, it ain't happening this year. Even if it does happen, it's because the division's garbage and we're not any good. It's we need a couple more wins, maybe one more, to make ourselves look better, to justify our existence. That's the Bruce Allen hallmark, right? That's something that shouldn't be happening. You should be willing to take a lump if it gets you to a better place down the road. And they've never been willing to do that.
Nick on Twitter says, Grant, Diggs and Jefferson are having basically the same season. Disingenuous to say Jefferson has been better. All right, I'll rephrase it then, right? Because Diggs' numbers in six games are about either even with or maybe a little better than Jefferson's, who's a rookie. I think Diggs has 40 catches and 555 yards. Jefferson has 30 catches and 535 yards. They both have three touchdowns. I'll rephrase it. Who would you rather have right now? Stephon Diggs on his contract at 26 years old, or Justin Jefferson on a rookie contract at 21 years old? Who would you rather have, Danny?
I'll take Justin Jefferson on that rookie deal.
Yeah, so would everyone else listening to this who knows anything about football.
And Diggs is really good, by the way. He's really
good. Diggs is a good football player. I'm not saying he's not. He also is a pain in the ass, but he's a good football player. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think if the Bills wanted to give Washington Stephon Diggs for a three today, would I do cartwheels if I could do cartwheels? 100%. Mm-hmm. He's an awesome weapon. He's a great talent. He might be a top 10 or 12 wide receiver in football at the end of this season. But I guess my point was just the Vikings kind of get lambasted for letting him walk. They make a move where they get a one back. They turn that one into Justin Jefferson and get other picks back. I would say, you tell me if you think I'm wrong, that worked out well for them. No?
Exactly. And again, people did this with the Raiders. How do you give up your best pass rusher? Your defense stinks. Very easily. We're not winning with him, so let's lose without him, but with a purpose. Let's let him get us something. They got multiple first-round picks. They got multiple high-level picks. And now the Raiders are 30 times better than they were a couple years ago, where they could be bad with Khalil Mack or better in a couple years without him. Just, it's so calm and correct. It's what you should do.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Next, let's rank the three undefeated teams left in football, the Steelers, the Titans, and the Seahawks. 1, 2, and 3. We'll do it in a moment on Cheese D. I know we said we'd rank the top three teams in football, but I just stumbled into something that we've got to get to first, and we'll do that in a moment. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. I have, I would say in my hand, like it's the newspaper, but I have on my laptop, Danny, a story from the Associated Press,
okay,
which someone had sent to me yesterday, from 2001, okay? This was circulating, I think Michael Phillips had found this. October 16th, 2001, the Cowboys had just beat Washington's then Redskins 9-7. The headline, a kicker survived a brush with a horse and then booted the game winner. So if you think this is as bad as it's gotten for Washington and Dallas, there are some gems in this story. But back in 2001, Washington was 0-4. This was Marty Schottenheimer's season. They would start 0-5. They'd win 5 in a row, and then they'd go 8-3 down the stretch, and he'd get fired anyway. But 0-4 Washington, 0-4 Dallas. I mean, there are just some great names in this story. For three quarters, the Dallas Cowboys and Washington Redskins really looked like they were playing the gutter bowl. Kennard Lang that week had called this the gutter bowl, saying both teams are trying to dig out of the gutter. Tim Cedar, whose kicking leg collided with a horse during pregame warmups, made a 26-yard field goal as time expired Monday night to give Dallas a 9-7 victory, its first of the year. Think about that, by the way.
Oh, man.
These 0-4 teams, a 9-7 Cowboys win over Washington. I remember this game like it was yesterday. The Cowboys 1-4, won their eighth straight game over the Redskins 0-5, who lost their first seven games in 1998. Random nugget to throw into this story, but I guess that was 3 years earlier. The only positive for Washington, which led 7-3 early in the fourth quarter, was the close loss. The Redskins had been beaten by at least 14 points in every game leading up to this, while getting outscored 135-25. Do you remember the start of that 0-1 season with the blowouts to the Chargers and the Chiefs? I mean, every game
Packers
was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Was the
Monday
Packers
football
in there,
against
too?
The Packers. They lost 30. This is a game I'll never forget. They lost 37-0 to the Packers. I don't need to look it up. Because Marty Schottenheimer was interviewed at halftime on the way to the locker room. And I forget the actual reporter's actual name, but Schottenheimer called him Bees. Right? Because it's something Beasley, because the guy must have played in the league. And I'm sitting there fuming because they'd gotten the doors blown off by San Diego the week before, 30-3, where they couldn't manage anything. It was the worst offense I'd ever seen. And then the second week, they're down 1,000,000-0 at halftime against the Packers, who are having sideline laughter midway through the first quarter. And Schottenheimer's going, you played the game, Bees. It's about desire. And no, it's about scheme. It's about figuring something out. It's about having an answer, Mr. Schottenheimer. And they scored 3, 0, 13, 9, and 7 points in their first 5 games. Just awful, awful football to watch. And then the season changed, quote-unquote, when LeVar Arrington intercepted Chris Wienke the following week against the Carolina Panthers and took it back to the residence. And 50-50, old Rod Gardner helped his average by making a couple catches in that ball game. But and
that
might have
been his 200-yard game.
Maybe it was
the next year. Was it?
Oh, I think that's what it was, yeah.
Well, they win that one. They win 5 in a row, and they end up being a .500 team. But at 0-5, it looked like that was going to be the worst Washington team ever. And I remember that Monday night game only because it was the first time since September 11th they had Monday Night Football. And so the kind of country was watching in this healing process. And as is always the case,
gross.
When that happens, it was just a no-show by the good guys. But back to this story really quick because there's a couple other funny things here. Instead of getting a competitive game from quality inept teams, Washington and Dallas traded silly mistakes until Tony Banks,
never forget,
threw a 31-yard touchdown pass to Michael Westbrook early in the fourth quarter to give the Redskins a 73 lead. So they were shut out through three quarters in that game at 0-4, by the way, and
Tony
still
Banks,
led.
Man.
They led 7-6 in the final minute. Now, the Redskins answered after this Cowboys field goal with a one-point lead by driving into Dallas territory, moving slowly and burning lots of clock.
Yeah, Marty.
Only to see Stephen Davis fumble at the Cowboys' 38-yard line. John Nix caused the miscue, which was upheld by video review, and Greg Ellis recovered it. 2:40 to play, 2 timeouts left. Who played quarterback for the Cowboys that night, Danny?
Ooh.
I could give you 50 guesses. You won't get it. I'll just tell you that.
2001.
Anthony Wright.
I would not have gotten it. I was going to guess Quincy Carter. That would have felt around that time, right?
I'm looking for Anthony Wright completed passes to Rocket Ismail and some other guy I've never heard of. His only healthy receivers to reach the Washington 34-yard line. Then 2 runs, including a 13-yarder from Emmitt Smith, set up Tim Cedar's game-winning field goal. And listen to this. Cedar's final kick was perfect. He showed no ill effects of having his right leg grazed by a horse that was on the field for pregame festivities. The kicker backed into the horse, and their legs accidentally met. He did miss kicks of 41 and 52 yards. I'd say he might have shown some ill effects then, right? He didn't miss 2 kicks, including a chippy. Flash bulbs popped as the game winner went through, and Dallas players ran onto the field celebrating as if they'd won a much bigger bowl.
Garbage. Absolute garbage. That's where we are now, by the way. History repeats itself, I suppose.
That's worse than this, right?
Yeah, an absolute flaming garbage pile, that game. But I guess it's similar. You get a well-respected guy with career track records, disciplinarian, to come in and instill his culture here in Washington. Very similar to what's going on right now, right? Marty Ball. That was Marty Ball through 5 games. It was just handing it off regardless of the situation. We're going to use that full 40 even if we're down 4 scores or 8 scores in the
but
case.
But that's why I love that excerpt so much because it's everything that is Marty Ball. It was like Washington didn't move very much and very slowly, but they did get to the 40 before they fumbled. Like, that's basically what the guy wrote.
And by the way, you and I talked about this a million times with the whole Cousins saga. And I know people were exhausted by it and tired of hearing it. But Tony Banks, man. The Matthews, the Werfels, this awful, terrible quarterback play where so many franchises just routinely have consistent franchise guys, Hall of Famers. Like the Chargers are going to hand the ball from Phillip Rivers to Justin Herbert. The Packers hand the ball from Favre to Aaron Rodgers. It's so routine for teams to have franchise quarterbacks, and it's never happened in my lifetime here in Washington. And there's something better out there. Teams routinely do it. They find a quarterback that's good that will start for more than a handful of years in a row that's not someone's leftover trash like McNabb or Brunell or somebody like that. That quarterback carousel is so evil.
Well,
and
that was what drove
upsetting.
Me nuts, to your point about the Cousins thing. Because like people act
people
like I wanted
it?
To pay him at the end, and at no point did I want to give him $30 million. You're letting him walk at that point. You've missed the boat. That was not my plan. I never wanted to sign him at the end of that. My point was, you know, he offered a multi-year deal at $19 million a year, and they said no. And then going into that first offseason after 2015, you can get a deal done, and they didn't do it. You have to have foresight at that position, or else you lose. It's over. You screwed up. So it doesn't matter re-legislating that at this point. But the bottom line is, by screwing that up, they are back there. Like, you're referencing these guys like Shane Matthews. Throw Kyle Allen in that list, dude. He's the starter this year for the rest of the way, potentially. The shell of Alex Smith that's going to hobble out there at some point.
That
Dwayne Haskins.
Is my biggest point, is that people are sitting there going, well, the offense looks slightly better with Allen. Irrelevant. Not a franchise quarterback. You should be in one of two phases, developing your franchise quarterback and playing your franchise quarterback.
But they don't have one.
If you haven't done step one, you go back to step one.
Yeah, but they don't have one, and you can't add one in season. So I understand, quote-unquote, irrelevant, but, like, it'll be irrelevant in 5 years. Right now in this moment, because you have to play games, somewhat relevant that he runs the offense better. But my point is, whether it's Haskins or it's Allen, like, Haskins theoretically could turn his career around and be good somewhere in a few years or something like that. But there is, at this point, a better chance that he's like the answer to a trivia question in 10 years about the guy that they drafted out of Ohio State who said the league messed up or whatever the quote was. Like, who was that guy? That's where they are. They're back in the let's guess for the next 5 years or overpay some JAG veteran, whether it's Cam Newton or someone else, at the end of their career as a retread to come in here and be mediocre. They're there again. So I just like this story. Tony Banks.
Congrats, everybody.
We'll be reading. We probably won't, but two guys like us will be reading a story from 2020 in 2039, where the Junkies will be reading it, and you're 61 of their show or whatever, and they'll be talking about Kyle Allen like we are Tony Banks. It's crazy, man. G&D on 106.7 The Fan. Double play at 11:45, and we're going Beltway blitzing at noon. Grant and Danny with you on The Fan. Still to come on the show today, Ron Rivera says he's not sending any mixed messages, which we disagree with, and also looks like a chance for the offense to get going against Dallas. We can start to look at a game plan to move the football against a bad Cowboys defense. That's all coming up on G&D the rest of the way with you until 2 o'clock. But, Danny, there are three undefeated teams in the NFL right now. The Titans, the Steelers, and the Seahawks. Of those three, I want to know who the best team is in football of the unbeaten. You could say Kansas City's still number one on the power rankings, or Green Bay or something like that after their dreadful performance if you want to. But of the three undefeateds, who do you like best?
I think the Steelers are the best team. I know they haven't had the style points through the first few weeks here, but the way they throttled Cleveland makes me think that the arrow is continuing to trend up for this group. I think they've got the best defense of the three. I think they probably have the worst offense of the three, but that's not an indictment because those other two offenses are just splendid. And it's really Russell Wilson, who's incredible. Tennessee's got ultra-efficient Ryan Tannehill and maybe the second-best running game of the sport behind Baltimore. But I don't trust either of those latter two defenses. The Steelers, I think, are going to continue to start to play better and better and better as Roethlisberger kind of gets back into the swing of things and gets comfortable. I think this is the best of those three teams. I'd probably put Seattle 2 and Tennessee 3. It's kind of begrudging, but you know, you're looking at point differential and some of the other metrics to say who's done what. Not all schedules are equal, especially through only five team games for each one of these teams. But give me Pittsburgh as the narrow victor among those three.
Yeah, the Titans actually have the second best differential if you're looking at points right now at plus 38, Seattle plus 34. Pittsburgh decidedly better than both at plus 62. Something that interests me about the Steelers, and I think this was just a quirk because one of their games got pushed that they have to make up against unbeaten Tennessee this weekend.
Right.
They've played four of their five games at home. Now, I don't really know what to do with home and away this year. Home field advantage, how much does it matter? Because the idea, I think, theoretically would be, well, if you're at home, the reason that we think there's a home field advantage is the benefit of your crowd. And now that there's no crowds or very limited low numbers of crowd, then it's not actually a home field advantage. But I'm not convinced of that. First of all, you're still sleeping in your own bed. There's no travel. So that's part of, I think, having to go on the road. It's not just that you're playing in another team stadium with their crowd, but that you are at home. You're comfortable. These are your confines. It's the stadium that you're used to. You're hanging your helmet on the hook that you normally do. Like all of those little nuances of being at home. So there might still be a home field advantage. On top of that, because of the way we're doing the crowd noise this year, with the, you can crank it up to, say, 75 decibels, and here is your CD, play tracks one on offense and two on defense, or however they're doing it, it's still an advantage from a volume standpoint, generally. Not going to be the same as having 70,000 people in the crowd, obviously. But you are going to be very loud when you're on defense, and you can quiet things when you're on offense. So I don't really know exactly what to do with home and away, Danny. Or you know, they're still giving 3 points in Vegas, to my knowledge, for the home teams. What's your thought on that? Because I look at that and I say, well, geez, I don't remember a team playing four of their first five games at home. And it wouldn't have happened that way if not for the postponement of the game. But that might be worth bringing up when we're talking about three teams with identical 5-0 records.
No, it is. And it's not as if the you know, the Pittsburgh faithful are making a lot of noise, yelling yins at the opponents. But you're right. It's comfort. It's convenience. It's ease. It helps. How much? I don't know. I think we'll see maybe as they have to probably have a bunch of road games in a row. I mean, you think about the road. Who's done better on the road than the L.A. Rams? Have traveled east a million times, it seems. And you know, got jobbed out of one game against Buffalo and beat up on the dumb, terrible NFC East. So who knows right now in 2020 what these advantages mean? It's not the normal 3-point advantage that Vegas typically gives you when you're playing at home. I don't know what it's going to how much it matters. It matters some, but maybe not as much as we're kind of used to saying. But it's a good nugget.
Did Vegas change their lines at all to account for that? Thom would probably know this before we do. I would think they're still giving 3 points to the home team. Is that changed? Do we know?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, all the sides have been shorter than they have been in previous years, but I do think they give an advantage. I don't know for sure, though.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you.
Because I think what's happening is people are saying home field advantage matters less, and that's probably true. I mean, that just goes without saying. If you don't have to go into some hostile environment, like go play in Seattle last year and this year, and you tell me it's not easier to do that.
Right.
But it's not a wash. It's not like traveling to Seattle when you're an East Coast team isn't a pain in the butt. It's not like it's fun to go there if you're Minnesota or, I don't know, the other teams that played there. Trying to think back to the game so far this season. New England, I think, was there. That's not a joyous occasion. So, I don't know. I'm going to go Pittsburgh 1. I'm actually going to put Tennessee 2, who I've been just sleeping on. And I'll put Seattle 3. And my only reasoning is, and I don't think that the Titans defense is all that much better, to be completely honest with you. They've given up 9 fewer points so far. I just think Seattle's defense is a issue. They're a problem. And they're not a problem like how Lewis Riddick loves to say, he's a problem every time a guy makes a play. They're a problem in a way that's going to be a detriment to Seattle at some point, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you've had Russell Wilson bail them out a number of times, quite frankly. And they should have lost that one game against New England. And, you know, the same way you could point to Tennessee, they should have lost a couple of their games as well. But you don't apologize for being 5-0. You're in that good spot. The Steelers are the only team that hasn't allowed 100 points yet. And that matters to me. And that's why I still got them number one. Even though their defense hasn't been as dominant at times, you think that Eagles game, they were going back and forth. They let up more points than you would have thought from them. They feasted against some inferior offenses that when they were just that much better. They shoved it on the Giants, as you should. They shoved it on the Browns. That was a big marquee W for them. But I just think that offense is going to continue to improve so that it's not that big of a drop-off between those other two teams and Pittsburgh on the offensive side. Tennessee and Seattle have great offenses. I think that's indisputable. I think Pittsburgh's offense is now pretty good and on the way to being solid good.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Our double play is next. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan at 1 o'clock today. Yahoo's Frank Schwab is on the show. Looking forward to spinning around the NFL with him. 12 o'clock hour. We'll make our survivor picks at 12:45, week 7. Trying to stay alive, stay in the hunt. We got to pick a team, no point spread. That is a lock to win this week. Having already used 6 teams, each of us have to get a little creative this weekend. A lot of the elites are off the board, so we'll do that coming up in 1 hour. It's time for our double play right now. Danny, 2020's for the birds. I don't know what you want me to say, man. I don't love the can't wait for this year to end thing because I feel like we do it every year. But Charlie Brown holiday specials are not going to air on TV for the first time in decades, Danny. For the first time in nearly 60 years, the Charlie Brown holiday specials will not be broadcast on television. Instead, they are moving to Apple TV+. Not all technological advancements, electronic, pushing forward, decisions with streaming are beneficial. If you're me, you like watching Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, specials, the Peanuts crew. Each year, local stations, according to CBS News, announce the much-anticipated air dates of the iconic Charlie Brown Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas shows. The trifecta of animated specials has aired on ABC for 20 years and for decades on CBS before that. Families sit around, they watch, you find out when you're going to see a Charlie Brown Christmas, 1965, a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, 1973, The Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown, 1966. Not this year, though, Danny, not unless you have Apple TV Plus. I don't think I have that. They're not going to be airing it on TV at all, only linear. A Charlie Brown Thanksgiving will be available on November 18th on Apple Plus, a Charlie Brown Christmas on December 11th, and starting a couple days ago, the Halloween special, The Great Pumpkin, is now available on Apple Plus. So if you're like me, and that was one of your ways to kind of bring the holiday season in, you turn on ABC, you watch that special like you're 5 years old again, not this year you won't. Gone.
That's a bummer. It is. It's a bummer. This was inevitable, right? Where every service, and I understand they're all trying to make money. They're all trying to compete in a very, 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 very crowded space, right? So you got to have a reason for someone to get Apple TV. That morning show thing with like Reese Witherspoon that's supposed to be great is not enough to get make me get Apple TV. You get more kids programming. If you start outpacing Disney, maybe I have to go get Apple TV. You know what I mean? I understand this was inevitable. I just think it's a shame. Some of those like classic, ubiquitous things that are wonderful traditions that make everybody feel good should always be available.
Yes.
And the fact that it's not just kind of stinks.
I like nostalgia. I like feeling like a kid around the holidays. I like the memories and thinking back to sitting there with my mom and my dad watching those things, and I want to do it with my kids. I guess I can get Apple TV Plus or something if it's important enough to me, and that's what they want. But all I can say to that, man, is that stinks. I like those shows. I want them on network television during the holidays.
I'm with you. Time for my double play, Tommy. I'll try to do this quick. You heard Chad maybe referencing this yesterday on his program. All of us here at this at our wonderful company had to do urgently ASAP. You have to do this today. All caps. You're all delinquents. We hate you. We're mad at you. This thing about a motor vehicle check, right? Apparently it was the most urgent order of business yesterday. Trying to put on radio shows, and we're getting emails from bosses saying that you have to do this, right? So I, like a good citizen the other day, I did the thing. I tried a million times to log into this thing, logging into the dumb email, but now email doesn't work, so we have to do a different thing just to get our email. Everything sucks. It's stupid. This is a dumb time, and this is a waste of time. But whatever. We have to do it, and it's part of working. In the real world, you have to do things like this that you don't want to do that are relatively meaningless. But whatever, I'm happy to do it. So I fill it out. I get an urgent phone call, apparently, yesterday at 1:54. I'm still on the radio with my friend Grant Paulson, so of course I don't get it. A voicemail is left. And for whatever reason, I happen to check this voicemail. All the voicemails I get now are, we've got something to help your junk, or we want you to have this urgent, terrible thing that you need to know about Joe Biden, or your credit is bad. Call this number.
Who wants to help your junk? What is that all about?
Well, it's just one of those like scammy, stupid spam message things, right? Where it's like you can add stuff to it. I mean, I'm not going to go into the details, but you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about, but you keep going.
You're very familiar with spam messages to help your downstairs region.
Voicemails?
Yes, constantly. Constant spam.
I've never gotten a voicemail about that, I'll be honest.
Bully for you. I seem to get them all the time. Anyway, the point is, I have to call a woman back. Her name is Kathy, and I called Kathy, and she told me there's a problem with my MVR. And I said, Kathy, I don't know what an MVR is. She says, oh, it's this motor vehicle thing that we have to do. And I said, well, if there's a problem, rest assured, I've never driven a station vehicle. I will never be driving a station vehicle. I rode a station vehicle one time when there was a snow emergency, and I got picked up from a metro stop. Not necessary, not a big deal, so you could file it under that. She goes, no, we have to do it. So we talked back and forth for several minutes. And if you remember, GP, a couple months ago, I tried to get my driver's license renewed here in the great city of Washington, D.C. And I'm waiting in line, and the guy tells me, you need an appointment. And so I tried to make an appointment, and the first available appointment is in January. So I have an expired license. I'm just rolling around with an expired license, but with this little email confirmation that I have an appointment to get my license updated in January of 2021 because of this stupid pandemic. So she tells me that's a problem. And I go, it sure is a problem. But again, I'm not concerned about your end of it. I'm concerned about me and if I get pulled over and how I'm going to try to explain this to somebody. Okay. So she's like, well, we need to send you a letter indicating that you're on probation from driving a station vehicle. And I said, send me whatever you'd like. Please enjoy sending it. Send it so hard. Send it fast. Send it however you want to send it. And I can't wait to get it and not have to deal with this anymore.
I want to come back to this because I want to know what happens if you get pulled over. How sure are you
too.
If you get pulled over driving on a suspended that you can just show them this email and everything will be fine because of the
not
pandemic?
Zero confidence in that. I was told it was fine. These things never work out.
Yeah, that is the Beltway Blitz is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.